John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. I welcome my colleagues, Bill Raggio and Tom Jossen. They are senior fellows at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. The Taliban, Afghanistan, much in the news because of a presidential remark about when the U.S. and how the U.S. and will the U.S. depart from Afghanistan after 20, 21 years. Bill, I begin with you because the enemy gets a vote. The Taliban apparently listened in on the president's remarks and responded. What do they want? We might as well consider them in the polling. Good evening to you, Bill.
Good evening, John. Yeah, the Taliban came out and said, you know what? You signed an agreement in Doha on February 29th, 2020, and that agreement said you will leave by May 1st, and we insist that you follow the Doha agreement and withdraw all your forces from Afghanistan by May 1st. And if you don't do so, the veiled threat is the responsibility of whatever happens. We can't be, you know, held accountable. It's your fault. They said that you signed this under the, you know, with other international observers, and those observers need to put pressure on the U.S. to leave by May 1st. So, look, I think the Taliban are happy that the U.S. are going to leave Afghanistan. They're just sticking it to us now by standing by the letter of the law when it comes to the agreement, and they want to, you know, make this as politically painful and humiliating as possible for the United States. And I think that's what we're seeing right now with the Taliban's actions.
Any change in their behavior since the president's announcement, Bill?
No, we haven't seen a change in their behavior. Again, they were invited to this last ditch effort to negotiate a phony peace with the Afghan civil society, which the government's included. There's a conference that's being held in Turkey. The Taliban said absolutely not. The U.S. they issued a statement that said, you know, this is timed in a way that, you know, it's only to make the U.S. look good while leaving, and we won't. If the U.S. doesn't agree to leave by May 1st, we're not attending this conference. We haven't seen any attacks on the U.S. There was a rocketing of a base in about a week or so ago, and these are the occasional things that happen. You have to keep in mind when you see a U.S. base rocketed, they're often co-located with Afghan forces. I'm not making an excuse for the Taliban, but they could legitimately say, no, we were targeting Afghans on that base. We weren't targeting Americans. Sorry, those rockets went your way. But, so that's what's going on. We haven't seen a change in Taliban behavior. I don't expect to until after May 1st. And it's possible that the Taliban don't go full bore on the U.S. It really does behoove them to just let the U.S. leave by that September 11th, 2021 deadline, which, of course, is the anniversary of 9/11.
Right.
Well-timed, well-played the Biden administration to give your enemies a fantastic political or a propaganda victory.
10 years after, Tom, you have an excellent piece up at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy identifying an odd fact that Mr. Biden gave us, that the right time to leave Afghanistan, I believe I characterized his words correctly, was right after bin Laden's death in Pakistan. He also expressed his doubts about the withdrawal agreement that Bill cites of February 29th, 2020. He would have had it otherwise. So he's characterizing his opinion very carefully. What do you make of it? Is this a man who is unsure that leaving is the wise course? How do you read him, Tom?
You know, I watched President Biden's speech, and I think it played on two different levels. One is the emotional level for Americans saying, you know, look, we don't really want to be in Afghanistan anymore. A lot of you don't want to be in Afghanistan anymore. And President Biden doesn't want to deploy any more Americans to Afghanistan, just doesn't want to deal with it. And I think on that level, you know, it sort of resonated, and I can understand what he's saying. And I certainly appreciate the idea that, you know, we don't want to be there anymore. I mean, I think Bill and I have been criticizing this war for a very, very long time now. On the other hand, there's the intellectual level, and that was a mess. You know, the president stumbled throughout the entire speech. He confused Iraq and Afghanistan several times. Is it a hard decision? Does he have any doubts about withdrawing? You know, he was asked that question by a reporter at Arlington National Cemetery immediately after the speech, and he just gave an unhesitating no, that he just wants out. He said, no, it's not. It wasn't difficult at all. So I think he's committed to this. But, you know, back to the intellectual content of the speech, I think if you read through it, you realize it, and you just examine it and the so-called logic of it, you see that it's a mess and that basically a lot of decision-makers in the American elite haven't really thought through or dealt with what's going on here for a very long time, and that's part of the reason why the war is such a mess. He basically is drawing a line between the insurgency that threatens Kabul and threatens the security of Afghanistan and the terrorist threats that threaten us, as if there's a clear line of demarcation between the two. And as Bill and I have stressed for years, there is not. You know, Al-Qaeda is heavily invested in taking over Afghanistan. And so the idea that there's just basically what happens in Afghanistan stays in Afghanistan, and we've eliminated any threat to the U.S. homeland, which is what he argued, what President Biden argued, just doesn't really make any sense. Now, you could say, look, we're going to leave and we're going to monitor threats and make sure we're going to do what we can from afar to, basically suppress them. He makes that argument as well. It's what Bill was so out in front and realizing that they were going to go for what's called the over the horizon model in that regard, where they were going to try and strike targets from afar. You can make that argument. But what's interesting is that contradicts the idea that the mission's been accomplished, right? I mean, why do you need over-the-horizon targeting of Afghanistan? Why do you need this to retain some sort of capability to hit terrorists in Afghanistan if you have nothing to worry about, if there's nothing to worry about coming the U.S. way or coming after Americans around the globe? And then finally, you know, he did mention the Taliban-U.S. agreement that was signed on February 29th of 2020 between the Trump administration and the Taliban. You remember, John, that before that agreement was signed, when that agreement was signed, and well after that agreement was signed, Bill and I were virtually alone in criticizing it and saying this was an example of servile diplomacy in which the U.S. was giving up much in return for nothing. And in fact, the Taliban was just basically making the U.S. capitulate and embarrass itself. And that's exactly what happened. What I would say is that, you know, President Biden said on the one hand, he probably would not have actually negotiated that deal, but he's sticking to it anyway because America did and we have to abide by it. Well, the problem with that is that the Taliban has done nothing to abide by the so-called counterterrorism assurances that are in that deal. They were supposed to prevent any anti-American terrorists from operating inside Afghanistan, inside the portions of Afghanistan they control as a result of that deal. That's one of the provisions. That never happened. They were supposed to make it clear that, you know, basically no terrorists should ever threaten outside of Afghanistan ever again. Well, they've been lying about that all along, and there's no real way to hold them accountable on any of that. So the deal was never worth the very short amount of paper it was written on, and there's no reason any decision maker, even if you just wanted to get out, should have cited that deal as being in effect.
You quote from the speech two extremely odd remarks. One, that his visit in 2008, before he was vice president, when he was chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, left him reinforced, quote, his conviction that only the Afghans have the right and responsibility to lead their country. All right, we can agree on that. But then this, more an endless American military force could not create or sustain a durable Afghan government. Tom, there's one way to read that just says that it's their problem. We're out of here. And if the government falls, we're not going back. Is that how to read that? We're done here.
I mean, he's certainly drawing into question the, you know, any American support for the Afghan government. And the problem is, look, I mean, if you listen to Bill and me talk about and listen to us talk about this through the years, we're not looking to do nation building anywhere or build governments anywhere. You know, this has all been a messy fight in Afghanistan in particular. But this is a government that the U.S. and its allies stood up to replace the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, and now specifically stood it up. And now, upon leaving, we're saying, well, it doesn't really matter if what you do from here on out. Basically, they're drawing moral equivalence between the Taliban and the Afghan government, which is really absurd. But what's interesting too about that remark from President Biden is that he said that he came to that conclusion, or his conclusion was reinforced upon visiting the Kunar Valley in 2008. And I was struck by that because, you know, I remember back to the 2008-2009 timeframe that one of the only analysts, my colleague here, Bill, was on the radio with us, was one of the few analysts saying, you know, that place is teeming with Al-Qaeda and that Kunar is Al-Qaeda central at this point. That basically, Al-Qaeda is really infiltrated that whole area of Kunar and Nuristan, and this is really where they're doing a lot of their planning from. And that turned out to be entirely correct. So when President Biden was there in Kunar, he was in Al-Qaeda country, and yet he's pretending like this is something other than Al-Qaeda country.
And there was no conviction in his remarks that to my reading, to my listening to it, a conviction that leaving Afghanistan solves the original problem. Afghanistan used as an ungoverned territory for al-Qaeda to prosper in. He offered no remedy when and if that is recognized. Correct, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, they've changed the talking point a little bit, you know, under the Biden, the Obama years, and then part of the Trump years, it was al-Qaeda was decimated. Now under the Biden years, they're degraded, so they've sort of just changed the D word they're using to describe al-Qaeda. We're going to see if that's true or not, of course. That's a big test of that claim. But yeah, I mean, they don't really have any answers for this. And, you know, it's another way there's a contradiction in all this, which is that President Biden says mission accomplished and there's no more threat to Americans emanating from Afghanistan. Okay, that's your claim. But then on the other hand, he says, but we're going to hold the Taliban accountable to this servile agreement that was signed in Doha of last year to say that, you know, basically the Taliban has to prevent terrorists from threatening the U.S. going forward. Well, if mission is accomplished and there is no more threat, then why are you even bothering to pretend that the Taliban could be our counterterrorism partner in this? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's just one of the ways in which there's no real – none of this really makes any sense. The bottom line is if he had given a one-minute speech and said, look, I'm done with this, we're done with this, and we're out, and I don't want to deal with it anymore, that would have been one thing. But they provided all these sort of pseudo-intellectual arguments to try and justify it, and none of them really hold up to scrutiny.
Tom Joslin, Bill Raggio, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. They keep the Long War Journal with their colleagues. When we come back, Russia, you will recall during the recent campaign – Russia was mentioned as a driver of attacks on American soldiers. Russia. Was it a fact? I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. My colleagues, Bill Raggio and Tom Joslin, of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. They are senior fellows here to help us remember, casting our mind all the way back into the fog of the election of 2020. Bill, you and Tom very carefully explicated on this show often that the claim that the Russians were paying the Taliban, paying them to attack American soldiers, didn't make any sense. Bill, let's start with, do you need to tell the Taliban will pay you $100 if you kill an American? Is that the Taliban?
Well, John, so there have been reports of the Taliban taking bounties. There have been credible reports of this. However, it wasn't from Russia. The word came out that that report that everyone leaned on and used against President Trump is just more evidence that he was supposedly in league with Russia because he ignores the intelligence. Well, that wounds up being low to moderate intelligence, but we have very good intelligence, and this shows up in the WikiLeaks documents, in news reports, in various other places, that the Iranians were actually giving the Taliban money for bounties against U.S. soldiers and whatnot. The Taliban don't need that in order to conduct these attacks, but it'll happily accept money to fund its operations, and that's really what it was. The Iranians were basically giving incentive for the Taliban to conduct additional attacks against the Americans, but it's not required. But so that's not a reason that the Russian story didn't make sense. There's a lot of reasons. It was obviously a very political story, for one, the timing during elections, but there was just no incidents that could actually be tied for these attacks. No, you know, so it was very vague information that came out. If the Russians want the United States to leave Afghanistan, the best thing they would do is to just let things play out. It didn't make sense that the Russians needed to pay the Taliban to conduct attacks and kill Americans. And, you know, there's a lot of bad history between the Taliban and what used to be, you know, the Mujahideen, many of whom have become the Taliban, and the Russians, given the Soviet war. So I there's a lot to this story that just didn't make sense. Shockingly, it winds up being a big nothing burger. And, you know, and also shockingly, the press sort of let this one go by. There's no accountability for throwing bombs like this. And then, you know, they walk away and go, oh, well, we might have got that story a little bit wrong, but who cares? Let's move on to the next story that we'll get wrong, and then we'll pretend like we don't care about it.
Tom, you're reporting April 8th, 2019, a bombing at Bagram Air Base. Three Marines are killed, several wounded. That specifically was mentioned I'm following your reporting. In the original allegation that the Russians were hiring the Taliban to kill Americans, you examine that in your essay and say it doesn't make any sense. It didn't make any sense then, doesn't make any sense now. Now, it's possible this was a gambit, a political gambit during the campaign of 2020. It's also possible that we need to solve this because this will come again. Do we know who was the source of this information? Was it the Russians, the Taliban? Do we know anything, Tom?
I mean, we know, look, I would say when you look at this story, what you have to realize is it's not that there wasn't any intelligence here. There was some intelligence that a unit affiliated with the GRU, Russian military intelligence, did offer, probably offer some sort of bounties or payments to, Taliban affiliated actors in Afghanistan. But if you think about it as a chain, a link in the chain where, you know, you have this sort of offer of some sort of cash payments, you then have to show that the cash actually was transferred, and they showed some cash was transferred, but then you have to link it back to the third link is link it to actual attacks. And the first thing that we noticed when the reporting came out was that was a particularly weak link in the chain, which is they couldn't really say with certainty that this led to any specific attacks. Now, one of the attacks that they said was a possible attack was this April 8, 2019 suicide bombing at Bagram Air Base. But Bill and I have been covering the Taliban's attacks on Bagram for years. I mean, you can go back with similar attacks all the way back to 2007 or even earlier. During a 2007 attack, Vice President Cheney was actually there, and that attack was very similar to this one in 2019 that supposedly was the Russians doing. And then you can point to attacks after the April 2019 attack at Bagram that were similar, including a suicide raid in December 2019. So the question that rose to us was, why is it that this April 2019 attack is supposedly different or significant or stands out somehow from the string of attacks that are all very similar on Bagram? It's the same actors doing it, the same style of attack, and it's the same target repeatedly throughout more than a decade. So why is it that this attack stood out? And there weren't any good answers along those lines. So I think that's part of the reason why this ultimately what came out from the White House this last week was that the intelligence on this was low to moderate confidence. Now, you think about the war in Afghanistan and just the ridiculously overwhelming amount of intelligence flowing out of that war and how much of it is low to moderate. Why is it that this reporting, which they couldn't verify and confirm, but was given only low to moderate confidence, why is it that this reporting stood out in the middle of 2020 in an election year in which the President of the United States accused of being a Russian asset and all this other stuff that didn't pan out? And I think the answer is very simple. It's because of the Russian angle, and that's something that the media and a lot of intel types were hot to trot on, especially in the era of Trump. And, of course, none of it actually added up to anything.
Gentlemen, I want to give you an opportunity to comment just briefly, 30 seconds, 40 seconds each, about the decision to leave on September 11th all American military personnel. Bill, I'll start with you. I stumble because we know a great part of our commitment to Afghanistan and Iraq is not military personnel, it's contractors. Do we know, will the contractors, hired guns, will they be leaving?
It's a good question. We don't know the answer to that. I suspect some that require the U.S. presence to maintain their security, those that are working on U.S. bases probably will leave. The question we don't know is those that are, say, working with NGOs and other working with Afghans, working right. with, you know, other logistic companies. We don't know about them, but what we do know is it will become much, much more dangerous for them to stay in Afghanistan. And if they have to leave, it's going to be much, much more difficult for them to do so.
And Tom, you agree with this, that the contractors, we don't know their fate. We have 20 seconds.
We don't know their fate. We do know that Jake Sullivan, a security advisor, said that the only military presence that will remain will be that to protect the U.S. embassy. And, of course, the big concern here is that there's a Saigon moment coming.
Tom Jocelyn, Bill Rajo, The Long War Journal. I'm John Batchelor. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. My colleagues, Bill Rajo and Tom Jocelyn of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, they are senior fellows. Here to help us remember, casting our mind all the way back into the fog of the election of 2020. Bill, you and Tom very carefully explicated on this show often that the claim that the Russians were paying the Taliban, paying them to attack American soldiers, didn't make any sense. Bill, let's start with, do you need to tell the Taliban we'll pay you $100 if you kill an American? Is that the Taliban?
So there have been reports of the Taliban taking bounties. There have been credible reports of this. However, it wasn't from Russia. The word came out that that report that everyone leaned on and used against President Trump is just more evidence that he was supposedly in league with Russia because he ignores the intelligence. Well, that winds up being low to moderate intelligence, but we have very good intelligence, and this shows up in the WikiLeaks documents, in news reports, in various other places, that the Iranians were actually giving the Taliban money for bounties against U.S. soldiers and whatnot. The Taliban don't need that in order to conduct these attacks, but it'll happily accept money to fund its operations, and that's really what it was. The Iranians were basically giving incentive for the Taliban to conduct additional attacks against the Americans, but it's not required. But so that's not a reason that the Russian story didn't make sense. There's a lot of reasons. It was obviously a very political story, for one, the timing during elections, but there was just no incidents that could actually be tied for these attacks. So it was very vague information that came out. If the Russians want the United States to leave Afghanistan, the best thing they would do is to just let things play out. It didn't make sense that the Russians needed to pay the Taliban to conduct attacks and kill Americans. And, there's a lot of bad history between the Taliban and what used to be, the Mujahideen, many of whom have become the Taliban, and the Russians, given the Soviet war. So I there's a lot to this story that just didn't make sense. Shockingly, it winds up being a big nothing burger, and also shockingly, the press sort of let this one go by. There's no accountability for throwing bombs like this, and then they walk away and go, "Oh well, we might have got that story a little bit wrong, but who cares? Let's move on to the next story that we'll get wrong, and then we'll pretend like we don't care about it."
Tom, you're reporting April 8th, 2019, a bombing at Bagram Air Base. 3 Marines are killed, several wounded. That specifically was mentioned, I'm following your reporting, in the original allegation that the Russians were hiring the Taliban to kill Americans. You examine that in your essay and say it doesn't make any sense. It didn't make any sense then, doesn't make any sense now. Now, it's possible this was a gambit, a political gambit during the campaign of 2020. It's also possible that we need to solve this because this will come again. Do we know who was the source of this information? Was it the Russians, the Taliban? Do we know anything, Tom?
I mean, we know – look, I would say when you look at this story, what you have to realize is it's not that there wasn't any intelligence here. There was some intelligence that a unit affiliated with the GRU, Russian military intelligence, did offer some sort of bounties or payments to Taliban affiliated actors in Afghanistan. But if you think about it as a chain, a link in the chain, where you have this sort of offer of some sort of cash payments, you then have to show that the cash actually was transferred, and they showed some cash was transferred. But then you have to link it back to the third link is link it to actual attacks. And the first thing that we noticed when the reporting came out was that that was a particularly weak link in the chain, which is they couldn't really say with certainty that this led to any specific attacks. Now, one of the attacks that they said was a possible attack was this April 8th, 2019 suicide bombing at Bagram Air Base. But Bill and I have been covering the Taliban's attacks on Bagram for years. I mean, you can go back with similar attacks all the way back to 2007 or even earlier. During a 2007 attack, Vice President Cheney was actually there, and that attack was very similar to this one in 2019. That supposedly was the Russians doing. And then you can point to attacks after the April 2019 attack at Bagram that were similar, including a suicide raid in December 2019. So the question that rose to us was, why is it that this April 2019 attack is supposedly different or significant or stands out somehow from the string of attacks that are all very similar on Bagram? It's the same actors doing it, the same style of attack, and it's the same target repeatedly throughout more than a decade. So why is it that this attack stood out? And there weren't any good answers along those lines. So I think that's part of the reason why this ultimately what came out from the White House this last week was that the intelligence on this was low to moderate confidence. Now, you think about the war in Afghanistan and just the ridiculously overwhelming amount of intelligence flowing out of that war and how much of it is low to moderate. Why is it that this reporting, which they couldn't verify and confirm, but was given only low to moderate confidence, Why is it that this reporting stood out in the middle of 2020 in an election year in which the president of the United States accused of being a Russian asset and all this other stuff that didn't pan out? And I think the answer is very simple. It's because of the Russian angle, and that's something that the media and a lot of intel types were hot to trot on, especially in the era of Trump. And, of course, none of it actually added up to anything.
Gentlemen, I want to give you an opportunity to comment just briefly, 30 seconds, 40 seconds each, about the decision to leave on September 11th all American military personnel. Bill, I'll start with you. I stumble because we know a great part of our commitment to Afghanistan and Iraq is not military personnel, it's contractors. Do we know, will the contractors, hired guns, will they be leaving?
It's a good question. We don't know the answer to that. I suspect some that require the U.S. presence to maintain their security, those that are working on U.S. bases probably will leave. The question we don't know is those that are, say, working with NGOs and other working with Afghans, working right. with, you know, other logistic companies. We don't know about them, but what we do know is it will become much, much more dangerous for them to stay in Afghanistan. And if they have to leave, it's going to be much, much more difficult for them to do so.
And Tom, you agree with this, that the contractors, we don't know their fate. We have 20 seconds.
We don't know their fate. We do know that Jake Sullivan, a security advisor, said that the only military presence that will remain will be that to protect the U.S. embassy. And, of course, the big concern here is that there's a Saigon moment coming.
Tom Jocelyn, Bill Rajo, the Long War Journal. I'm John Batchelor.